copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
The subject for our first talk is just why we're having this network. What does it mean, church revitalization? And what I intend to do is to give you part of the reasons and then have some interaction between you, and then a second part and again some interaction. Because what we don't want in this network is just for people to stand and talk. We also need to interact. I am very convinced that in today's postmodern world, people learn more by talking with each other and listening and exchanging than just listening to other people. I think that's an important thing. So this is like an introduction to church revitalization. Some of you may have seen this before. I make no apologies, but it's the basis for why we are doing this network. So first of all, some statistics. This was a study done in the United States. I admit I don't know who did it, but what I do know is that you can find this on the website of several different denominations in the United States. And the study they did showed that they thought only between 10 and 15% of the evangelical churches in the United States were healthy and multiplying. And between 70 and 75% were plateaued, that means it's level, or slightly declining, and between 10 and 15% were at or near risk of actually disappearing. Now, often we hear all the great success stories of from the United States, and there are some great churches and some big churches and some smaller churches which are healthy, but there are a lot of churches which are just plateauing and declining. So my story is this. And this is why I got involved in this. As I told you, I've actually been in ministry for the last 40 years in France. I think I told you that I took French nationality back in 1989. The date is significant because it was to celebrate the bicentenary of the French Revolution in 1789. I have four children. They all live in France. 10 grandchildren. They also live in France. And my ministry for 30 years was in church planting. And I have a great heart for church planting. With my wife, we planted two churches in Nancy, which is in the east of France, and another church in the suburbs of Paris, which is quite special. It's a very multicultural church with a lot of people as well, not just French, but African, Caribbean, Indian, Tamils, and so on. But 10 years ago, or 9 years ago to be exact, the mission I work with, which is called France Mission, which is a church planting mission and denomination, because the churches we plant become like a denomination. With them, I was looking for my next place of ministry. And what happened is, to cut a long story short, that ended up in central Paris in a church which was about to disappear if no one came to sort of, well, the word I used at that time was to replant it. I didn't know the word revitalization, never heard of it. And so suddenly, from 30 years of church planting, I was in this church, which is a very small church. At least they had a building for the first time ever, because when you're church planting, you also have to think in terms of getting money to buy buildings and so on. At least I had a building. I didn't have to worry about that. Not a big one, but Paris is expensive. So, okay, we had we've got a meeting hall in which we can put about 80 people. That's good. But there were just quite a few people there. So I started working on this revitalization, which wasn't called by that name at the time. And I realized suddenly I was in a very, very different situation than in church planting. And although some of the principles were the same, and it's going to be very interesting because our second speaker today is going to talk about what we can learn from church planting for church revitalization, yet it's not quite the same. And so I had the opportunity a few years ago to work with someone who was going to do an internship. She was a woman from, actually she's a Christian, but she did an internship with me from a secular training school. I had to be a sort of secretarial administrative help. So I got her to do research, and she spent a lot of her time looking into what was in English about revitalization. I suddenly, and that's where I came across this. I thought, wow, I think this is a big issue. We're church planting, but what about the churches which had been planted? And I put this into the context of the National Council of Evangelicals in France, which is called the CNEF, National Council of French Evangelicals, in which we have the objective of seeing what we call one for 10,000, that is, one church for 10,000 inhabitants in France. So that, in other words, if you're working in a town of 50,000, we want at least five evangelical churches, for example. And at the moment, it's about one for 30,000, so we need to do a lot of church planting. But it suddenly occurred to us that if for every church we plant, an older one disappears, we're never going to get to one for 10,000. So we also have to think in terms of church revitalization as well as church planting. So I did a quick survey, a very intuitive, non-scientific survey, by sending a little questionnaire to the leaders of all the 22 denominations affiliated to the CNEF, and to ask them subjectively, where would you place the churches in your denomination? Healthy and multiplying, plateauing or slightly declining, or in danger of disappearing? Subjectively, but at least it gave us some idea. And the answer we got was slightly more encouraging than the States, because they said 51% plateaued or declining, but 51% healthy or multiplying, 38% plateaued or declining, but 11% at or near risk of disappearing. So we realized that although the figures were more optimistic than from the other side of the Atlantic, half the churches needed help in going through to the next stage of their development because they just weren't developing. And I often finish my first little part of the presentation before I move on with that picture. And those who have been in my workshops before don't answer. What is that animal? Does anyone recognize that animal?
Yeah.
No, it's not a hyena. It's an animal called the Tasmanian tiger. And that is the last one, a photo taken just before it died in 1936. It disappeared. The last one. And that fact, the zoo threw the body away, so we don't even have any DNA or anything. But from time to time, if you look on the internet, you'll find people in Tasmania saying, I saw one, it's still alive. Not convinced. But anyway, the point is that I have that picture on my desk to say, we don't want that to happen to our churches. The Tasmanian tiger. Okay. It's just a little visual aid to say that's what we don't want. So, just very quickly, because I don't think we need to stress this particularly at the moment, just some of the things that make us think this church needs revitalization. There are signs that it needs revitalization. The first thing is there's a gradual erosion. That means it's happening so slowly that sometimes people don't realize. It's like when we see a photo of, for example, taken 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And you think, wow, yeah, I look older now. But when you look in your mirror every morning, you don't see it. But it's the same with the church. You may not see, and you suddenly think, oh yeah, a few years ago there were 50% more in our congregation, or we were doing more things or something. And And so when people begin to realize that, they tend to live in the past. Nostalgia sets in, and they start thinking, oh, it was great. It was really good in the past, but today we're... Well, we'll keep it going, but it was great in the past. And the consequence of that is a refusal to live in today's world and to be in phase with the neighborhood around the church. I'll come back to that question of contextualization later. But it's looking back to the past and seeing how good things were in the past. And this can happen in all sorts of situations. And if you want something very objective to look at the budget of the church and see what the money is being spent on. Is it being focused on maintaining what exists? Or is it being used more on people's needs? People not just in the church, but outside of the church. Mission, evangelism. What's been budgeted in the church? That is a very objective thing to look at if you want to know if it needs revitalization. Amnesia regarding the Great Commission to go and make disciples of all nations. You tend to be like a club. In France we have the Club Med, if you heard of that, where it's a little club and you're with people you know and you like being together and it's nice to meet together. And it's true, we're a minority. So at least on a Sunday morning we can be together or at certain times and we can encourage each other. Well, that's good. But we've also been told that we should be sent out into the world. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you. And then paraphrasing Rick Warren's book, The Purpose-Driven Church. You've probably heard of Purpose-Driven Church. If you know the title, the paraphrase means nothing to you. But the paraphrase is the preference-driven church. That is, we do in our church what I prefer to do, what I like, and without thinking whether this will actually help people who aren't Christians to discover the gospel. So we do what we like, and we're not thinking in terms of loving our neighbor outside of the church by the sort of things we do. And again, a very, very objective thing is the church rarely prays together. That is like an objective sign that it needs revitalization. And Phil, in our meeting yesterday, told a story about this, how he went to a church and said, do you pray together? Said, oh yes. But when do you pray? Well, our pastor prays in the service. But when do you pray together? No, we don't. So that's an important thing. It's another objective sign of the need. And the final thing is that the church is functioning by routine. The expression I like, which is an English expression, I hope you'll understand, is going through the motions. That is, you're just doing the same things you've already done. And sometimes you say, yeah, we're being faithful because we're doing it, but we're just going through the motions. Very quickly, the concept of revitalization runs through the Bible, I think. I refuse totally what I've heard some people say. Church planting is more important than revitalization because it's easier to give birth to a child than to raise the dead. I've heard people say that. A lot of people. But actually, everything that was written in the past was written to teachers, Romans 15, Judges 2, which says a generation arose that didn't know the Lord. So that can happen in our churches. And an important factor is how we pass on the responsibility and the teaching to the following generation. You can look at the kings of Judah and Israel. In our church, we're doing our Wednesday evening Bible studies. We're on the kings. It is frightening how many started well and finished badly. Even some of the good kings finished badly. Just to mention too, Solomon, Hezekiah. So that is a kind of cycle which is there, which is a warning to us. And then in Haggai chapter 1, my house remains a ruin while each of you is busy with his own house. I don't know what translation I got that from. What I like in French is that it says, "My house remains a ruin while each of you is busy making their house panelled with wood." And so, yeah, and after a while, church is like an adjunct, a little additional thing, but people are tending more to look after their own lives, their own jobs, their own houses, and so on. So the Lord's name is not the most important thing in the heart of people. Coming back to David this morning. And in the New Testament, I think it's interesting to see that revitalization, in one sense, is emphasized in all the seven letters to the churches. In five of the seven letters to the churches. Two of the churches are okay. Smyrna and Philadelphia are told to hang on, be faithful, continue what you're doing. But the other ones are really in difficulty, and for all sorts of reasons. Ephesus, loss of the first love. Pergamum, the need to fight against doctrinal error. Thyatira, the need to fight against sin and immorality. Sardis, the church has a reputation of being alive but is dead. And Laodicea, the church is lukewarm. We could do a whole study on that, but we decided not to because I've done it in other places during this forum. But if we take, as I do, that the seven letters represent the whole range of churches for the last 2,000 years, because seven is the figure of perfection. If you take it that, then each church represents some stage in the development of the church or different types of church that we can see. So those five things we can see all through history that's happening. So we're always needing either reformation, as we talked about just now, the 500th anniversary, revitalization, new breath, new life, because this is almost an inevitable cycle. If we're not doing it purposefully, intentionally, it may not happen. And so, just to quote two of them, Ephesus and Sardis, we see the same thing. The need to remember, repent, recover the first things in Revelation 2:5 for Ephesus. And wake up, strengthen what remains, remember, obey and repent for Sardis. So you remember, you're looking with lucidity, with clarity of mind. You're seeing what the situation is in your church. You remember what it perhaps was. You repent, which means, for me, you think differently. It's the root meaning of repent, think differently. And you work to recover the first things, what you were at first, or obeying and repenting. And finally, I think it's also important to make two types of distinction. Firstly, the stage the church is at. You have the bottom level, which is it's about to disappear, it's about to become extinct. That's what Phil does a lot in the UK, the churches which have become very small, and unless you do something, they're just going to die. Then you've got a church in crisis. This is more the church which is more just beginning to decline. People are realizing it's beginning to decline. And so they're saying, yeah, we need to do something before it gets too late. And the third level is the stable church, because I once in a meeting in France, without even thinking, I pronounced a sentence which everyone thought was very funny, and actually when I think of it, it's quite interesting. I said, there is nothing more stable than a stable church, nothing less stable than a stable church, because either it's going to go backwards or hopefully it's going to go forwards. Stability is very difficult to keep. So at some point, what we're saying is, and I think this is the important word to remember, that if you don't like the word revitalization, and some people don't, What we're trying to do is to build healthy churches. That's the important thing. The word healthy churches, I think, is the key expression. And then the second distinction is that there are some differences in revitalization in the different regions of Europe. And I would mention three in particular. Firstly, you have the more northern countries. So you've got Germany, Holland, United Kingdom, Scandinavia, and so on, where sometimes the churches have been in existence for a long time. Maybe they were very flourishing even a century ago, but now need revitalization. In the countries of Central and Eastern Europe, it's a very different situation, because they went through a time sometimes of persecution, and then in the 90s, sometimes great growth. The Soviet system disappeared and people were looking for spiritual reality. Many people became Christians at that time, until about 10, 15 years ago, when the Western European mindset, mentality of materialism, post-modernity came in, and so suddenly the rate of conversions are dropping in the Central and Eastern European countries. Whereas in Southern Europe, where I come from, so maybe Spain, France, Italy, we've done a lot of church planting over the last 40 years, and quite a few of the churches, unfortunately, planted, say 40, even 30 years ago, didn't manage to move on from the founders and need revitalization. The same principles are true, I think, which we're going to see for the three regions, but there is a difference between the different regions in Europe. Okay, I want to suggest, and this is a fundamental thing, and I'm coming back to the reasons for the network. If you remember at the beginning, I said there were five things that we wanted to do in the network. And I think we need a five-fold approach to building a healthy church. I started thinking of this when some guy once said to me, well, what's the difference between revival and revitalization? And it's true that very often we pray for revival, and why not? But I also know that it's not quite the same thing. When I was a student many years ago, I was in a church in Bristol in the UK, which is quite near a country called Wales. And I had an old lady in the church who had lived through the revival in Wales at the beginning of the 20th century. I don't know what date it was exactly, Chris.
1904.
She had so many stories to tell. I don't think Wales is still as evangelized, the churches in Wales have problems like elsewhere, I think, and possibly worse sometimes.
Christianity died faster in Wales than any other part
of
Europe.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So despite the revival in the past, so I think the difference is that a revival is great, and it's on a spiritual level, but revitalization needs more than that. And what I would like to suggest, and this is the basic thing that we will keep coming back to all the time when we're talking about church revitalization, is that there are five aspects or five approaches. During this week, we won't look at all of them. We haven't got time to look at all of them, but little by little, as the years go by, we'll try to look more in depth at different ones. And as I said, in our year-round mentoring, we try to go through them as well and see how that applies practically in the church. The first thing is a spiritual dimension. It's improving the spiritual health of the church. What do I mean by that? I would say three things. Worship, in a sense, is the first commandment, to love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Trusting God and obeying God. And in one sense, it's living in the presence of God, Coram Deo, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. One of the reasons that I stress those three things, and the fourth one will come, is that about 4 or 5 years ago, I was thinking of writing a book for the students in the student movement that I was responsible for in France at the time, on discipleship. And I said, so many things are said on discipleship, what does it mean? So I went on a kind of mini retreat to the coast in Brittany in the west of France, in my son's home, and I read the whole New Testament. But in fact, it only takes 2 days to read the whole New Testament. Perhaps we should do that more often. If you start in the morning after breakfast and read through till supper for 2 days, you can read the whole New Testament. And so I had a lot of sheets of paper at that time, and I tried to put into categories everything which is asked of Christians, whether it's disciples, the word is only used in the Gospels and Acts, and all the instructions of Paul and Peter and James. And I found that with only about two exceptions, everything fell into four categories: loving God, trusting God, obeying God, and the fourth one we'll see in a moment, which is loving your neighbour, loving others. And everything can be reduced to that. Okay, we need to think a lot about it and what it means, but these are the fundamental things that we should be doing. So improving the spiritual health of the church is worshipping and loving God, trusting and obeying God. In a sense, that is revival, if you like. But there are other dimensions. The second one is the social dimension, which is improving relationships within the church and with unbelievers, and also integrating new people into the church. In today's world, social relationships, the social media and so on, are so important. The important thing in today's world is the relationships you have with people. This is why, in some senses, it's very difficult to evangelize, because respecting the relationships, being tolerant of other people, is more important than sharing what you think with people, because you just have to respect them. Relationships are important. This is an incredibly important thing, because that loving others is the second commandment. Listening to them, showing an interest in them, doing good to them, encouraging them. In other words, when someone becomes a Christian, I think two things happen. Firstly, we are reconciled with God. As sinners, we're forgiven. We have a relationship with God. And then he wants to renew our humanity, the image of God in us. You can also call that sanctification, or you could call it learning to love others. I was very struck by what Pablo said last night. It means you first, loving others. And this is something we really have to learn, because our whole society is taking us in another direction. And it's quite interesting, because it's really struck me as a little anecdote. I like little anecdotes. The beginning of last month, when I was in Lithuania, I was asked to speak on a radio program. I was interviewed on a radio program where there were three of us, and he was asking the question in Lithuania, and had the pastor whispering the question in my ear, and I was answering in English and so on. And from time to time, the person who was doing the interview would come out and play a bit of music and come out and say, "These are the questions I'm going to ask you next." But he went back in his cabin and never asked those questions and asked other questions. And the question he suddenly asked is, you know, when someone becomes a Christian, what is the biggest change in their life? And I just sort of, without thinking, said, he's not going to put himself first, he's going to put others first. He's going to love others. And building relationships is so important. And even in evangelism, as the chair of the Evangelism Commission of the National Council of Evangelicals, I think of the word in English. I got a secular opinion poll company to do a survey among the general population on, well, the question I would have liked to ask, but of course you couldn't, is how would you like to be evangelized? we had a lot of discussion with the company how we were going to ask the questions. But it was done exactly like a political poll, if you like, with 1,100 people in categories of male and female and cities and villages and economic level and all sorts of things like that. So I think what they said was pretty good. It's like a political opinion polls. They sometimes get it a bit wrong, but not totally wrong. And the interesting thing is that the one of the things, possibly about the second most important thing was, they said, I would like someone of that religion to tell me about it when we have a coffee together or a meal together. That was the means of evangelism that the non-Christians wanted. So that confirmed my intuition that evangelism is also going to be relational when we love people. And this is really important as we're thinking of revitalization, to learn to love each other among Christians, but also to love non-Christians. The third dimension is the societal dimension. If you noticed, as a good preacher, each one of these begins with the letter S, so that you remember. Societal is not a very common word. What it means is contextualization. So societal is, how do you improve the contextualization of the church? And that's part of revitalization. So I said, one of the signs is you're living in the past and not living in today's world. As we were saying yesterday, when I was a young Christian, as a student, much of the apologetics that I was having to do was with all the Marxists and so on, whether they were Marxist-Leninists or Trotskyists or Maoists or anything else, because that was the important questions at the time. It's not the questions today. It's much more, you know, what do you do about transgender or same-sex marriage and so on. It's a very different world. So we have to be contextualized. Before 1968, we still lived in the modern world, and that's why I talked about Marxism, where everyone thought they had the answer which applied to everybody. But it's no longer the case. And if you think you have the answer, then people tend to think this is dangerous, because he thinks he has the answer for you. It's just, you found your way, that's great. But leave me alone. So we have to understand how to live in the contemporary world, and I think there are two or three aspects. Understanding the challenges which the Bible helps us to face today, building bridges to unbelievers, but not living in a parallel world to the rest of the population. That's very important. We need to be contextualized. We're not changing the message, but we're saying we're answering the questions that people are asking. So we need to identify with the needs of society outside the church. So we come back to this. Contextualization is both chronological and geographical, depending where you are, but also the postmodern world that we're in. Then we need to be contextualized, need to work on that. The fourth dimension is what I call the structural dimension. This is basically improving the quality of leadership within the church. Phil, who works a lot with the churches in the UK, has said many times, because he believes this very strongly, the one issue which comes up the most often is problems of leadership in revitalizing the church. So we need to think of leadership, which means having vision casting, working, how to work as a team, delegate responsibilities, and how to bring about change. I like the image which I've read in more than one book. When you're in a plane before takeoff, they show you how to put your strap on as if you don't know, and so on. They always say the oxygen mask will fall if there's a depressurization of the cabin. Put your own on before you help someone else. So in a sense, the leadership must put its own revitalization mask on before revitalizing the church, which is why leadership is so important. And the fifth dimension is what I call the strategic dimension. We'll be talking a bit about this on Wednesday. That is improving the effectiveness of the church. Effective means you're reaching the destination you want to get to. And you can we can use some of the vocabulary that is used in business, for example, and say, what is the mission of our church, the reason why we exist? For example, in my church, among other things, we say to reach out to the Parisian population, because there are actually very few churches in central Paris. It's so expensive to live there. Then the vision is, where do you want to be in 5 years' time? So, and you work out what your values are, and your strategic plan is what you can do to get to that vision, deciding what things can be done intentionally. Not everything can be done intentionally, but what can you do intentionally? You can focus on a few things and do them well. Sometimes a church which is living above its means and doing so many activities that it can't do them properly. What are the really important things that should be done? And then introducing new ideas.